If you haven't got money, you're screwed. In fact, if you haven't got money, you're screwed in every regard. You're going to get a digital ID. You're going to end up being a complete slave. You're going to end up living in communist England. You're going to end up not being able to say what you want and what you think on social media. Otherwise, you'll be turned off. You're going to end up having to be a complete yes man to the government, and you will suffer, and so will your kids, and so will your kids' kids. I feel like I've been thrown out of England. I genuinely feel like I've been thrown out.
Why?
Because I'm persecuted. I'm persecuted by the media. I'm persecuted by the government. They talk about me in the House of Parliament negatively. What are we going to do about Samuel Leeds? I'm persecuted with the taxes. I make tens of millions of pounds every year. And if I make less than a million in a month, I would be very, very upset. And I've not made less than £1 million revenue in a month for probably at least 4 years.
Hey guys, and welcome back to Getting There, the podcast where we strip back the noise and sit down with people who've built their version of success to ask what it really took to get there. Today, I'm joined by someone who divides in opinion and doesn't shy away from it. From being kicked out of a church to building a multi-million pound property empire, Samuel Leeds is a man whose story is anything but ordinary. Today, we sit down and talk about faith, ambition, money, and the truth behind the headlines. From homeschooling his children to refusing to house illegal immigrants and why he chose to leave the UK for Dubai. But beyond the controversy and beyond the clickbait, I wanted to get the man underneath the marketing. What really drives him? What keeps him grounded? And how does he really measure his success? So whether you love him or question him, this conversation will make you think differently about what freedom, faith, and financial independence really means in today's world. Let's get into it.
Don't forget to like and subscribe.
Hello, Samuel Leeds, and welcome to Getting There, the podcast. How are you?
I'm great. Good to be here. Good to meet you.
Good. I know. I've been so excited. I've been following you since I found you, and I've been really enjoying your content and your videos and just all that you stand for, really. So I'm excited to dive deep into it today. But what I think is quite useful with the guests is to kind of bring it back-ish to the beginning so I can understand who sits in front of me. And when I looked into your life, I could see in the early part you were kicked out of the church.
Yes.
And I'm kind of sitting here thinking, what kind of impact did that have on your life?
Mm.
And why was it?
Yeah, very painful. Not even my church. I mean, that was probably the most painful, but also just I've always been... Like I was at school, it was the same. I was always on the verge of being expelled at school. And then I became a Christian and joined a church. And then I got thrown out of the church, asked not to come back. Then I went to Bible college. I spent 3 years at Bible college. And 2 months before I finished and got my all my degrees or whatever I need to get, I got thrown out of that. So wow. Now I feel like I've been thrown out of England. I genuinely feel like I've been thrown out.
Why?
Because I'm persecuted. But I'm persecuted by the media. I'm persecuted by the government. I'm persecuted. They talk about me in the House of Parliament negatively. What are we going to do about Samuel Leeds? I'm persecuted with the taxes.
But is not every rich person persecuted with the taxes?
With the taxes, yes. But they're not talked about in Parliament. They're not trashed by the BBC.
But isn't part of that because you're a polarising figure?
No, I'm a very rational, common sense Christian thinker. I mean, there's nothing controversial about what, in my opinion, I'm from a good family. I've got 4 kids. I'm happily married. I've been married for over a decade. I don't understand what's so controversial. I don't quite get it. To me, it's common sense.
But you have been known to put things up that would fuel the fire, like the chainsaw video of like you pretending to get tenants out. So that would probably spark.
Yeah, you know what? That's almost like, you know what? Fine, I'll give you what I want. It's like when you're a kid at school and they keep telling you you're stupid. You go, all right, then I'll be stupid.
Yeah.
Oh, you want that? Oh, you okay? Fine. Here's a chainsaw. And then of course they're like, oh my gosh, yes, we got him. No, actually, it was empty, and it was just one of my empty hotels. Just that's why I did it. Just because I knew that
within
3 hours of them seeing me with a chainsaw, they would be like, oh my gosh. And it was in the Daily Mail. It was in the right-winged papers. It was in the left-winged papers. It was everywhere. And then I was just like, yeah, it was empty. But they just love it. So anyway, I don't know how we got so depressing within the space of 2 minutes. But yeah, I got kicked out of church. You know what happened though? When I joined the church, because my dad, I worked for my dad.
Yeah.
And then when I left school at 16, and then after 3 months, I thought, I don't really want to do this anymore. So I stopped. But my dad basically... fell out of me really badly. Didn't speak to me for years.
And you are how old for context?
16.
Okay.
And then one of the reasons that I left working for my dad was because I wanted to go to church on Sundays, but he wanted me to work on Sundays.
Right, okay.
And I'm like a bit conflicted. So I ended up quitting, going to church. And then the pastor of my church became like a spiritual father. And I felt for the first time like accepted in my church. And I'm like, I was getting involved in the youth. I went out to Africa. I spent a few weeks in Zambia. And they were all saying, we should raise money. We should raise money for these things. And I thought, you know what? I reckon I can make the money. So I started a little business. My business started making money. The church loved me. They even had me like speaking. And I was doing stuff with the youth. And then as my business began to get more successful, then the pastor, every time he'd speak about money, he would look at me like in a bit of a strange way. So he'd say like, you know, money is the root of all kinds of evil. And he'd look straight at me when he says it. And I'd be like, does he think I'm like... So I spoke to him. And he's like, yeah, you know what? And it just, there was a bit of something funny business there. And then one day I turned up to church and the elder and the caretaker just were at the doors and just said, you know what? We think you need to find somewhere new to go. And I was like 20 years old.
And you've been giving back to the church.
Oh, yeah. I was giving money to the church, yeah.
And what do you think made them take that decision? Do you think it was an envy?
They said that it was because I was overzealous and lacking in humility.
And what was your response to them?
I was sad, you know. I was heartbroken, actually. Yeah, and then I went, and then I thought, is this something wrong with me? You know? And that's why I went to Bible college, because I wanted to find out, as a Christian in business, is it even allowed? So I did my whole, my dissertation in biblical economics, and it was going all good. And then 2 months before I completed my 3-year course, I got thrown out of that.
For what reason?
Oh man, I don't even want to think about it now. It's complicated, but basically I was dating somebody.
Yeah.
And she...
Not the teacher, was it?
No. I was dating somebody who was also at the Bible college.
Yeah.
And she wanted to buy something. She wanted to do something, start a business. And she went to get a loan, and she went to Lloyds Bank. And Lloyds Bank said, you can't get a loan because you've only been banking for 4 months. Come back in 2 months. And then I got a phone call off of that, of my girlfriend at the time. She said, come to Lloyds Bank. I came, and Lloyds Bank manager, I've never told this story before, by the way. It's too painful. But basically what happened was I got done, because the Lloyds Bank manager and her were like, oh, can we put the loan in your name just for a couple months and then switch it? And I was like, oh, okay. Well, she's my girlfriend. Fine. It was quite a decent, at the time it felt like it, 12,000. So I was like, okay, fine. So I took the loan in my name. And then 2 months later, I said, oh, we're going to switch it back to your name, like we agreed. And then she finished with me.
Oh.
And I'm left now, not only heartbroken, but also I'm left in debt from this. And I'm like, what the heck? So I reported it to the Bible college.
Yeah.
The principal. I said, just so you know, like we split, and this, and it was only a small college. And their attitude was, oh, well, haven't you got properties and stuff? Oh, you can afford it. And I'm like, what? No, man, this isn't right. This is
immoral.
Wrong. Yeah, it's immoral. It's not about the money. I was only like, maybe at this time I was like 22 years old.
Not being funny, £12,000 for a 22-year-old back then is a lot of money.
It was, and I was doing all right. I did have some houses and stuff, but it was a lot of money. It hurt. And then I said, no, man, I said, that's wrong. You know, and it was only a very small community. So I'm still sat next to her in class. I'm like... And the way the college was, they would get involved in disputes like that. And you know what I mean? Very pastoral.
Yeah.
And I said, that's not right. And they said, oh, well, you can afford it. And I'm like, nah, what? Are you joking? Mm. And then they chucked me out.
So with that experience and being thrown out of the church earlier, did that kind of make you go the other way? Like, fuck you, God, you're not the God I thought you were? Or how did you find faith in that? Because I guess your versions have been manipulated through lots of different circumstances.
No, it didn't make me say angry towards God. It drew me closer to God, but it did make me a little bit disillusioned with humanity, you know. But no, I joined another church. Pastor Gary Spicer took me under his wing, and he fully got it, and there was a lot of healing and stuff like that, and we're still very, very close today. So it definitely didn't make me feel angry at God, but it did make me feel betrayed, and also you question yourself, you know what I mean? It's like, is there something wrong with me?
Yeah.
Why am I constantly on the verge of getting kicked out all the while of everything? And as I say, now kicked out of the country, I don't get it. Obviously, I'm not kicked out of the country, but the fact that I feel like I'm persecuted in the UK, persecuted by the media. I mean, the BBC did a whole documentary about me, a full-on documentary about me. And I'm like, do you not want to sit and debate? If you've got an issue with me, come. In fact, that's why I do debates regularly. I'll be like, if anyone wants to say anything bad about me, you got come and let's sit down and let's talk it through.
Mm.
No one wants to do that.
Sorry, we were just talking earlier about you feeling persecuted in the UK. Are there any particular instances that have really stuck with you?
Yeah, there's a few. I mean, there's obviously the taxes, which is just rich people in general. There's the banks. The banks making it really difficult. There's the fact that they talk about me in Parliament and say, what are we going to do about Samuel Leeds? Oh, he runs unregulated courses. What the heck? The biggest one was the media, though. Like, there's nothing they can say about me, but the hit piece that the BBC tried on me in 2019 was just I'll tell you what happened. We've got thousands of members in our community. One guy who, tragically, he's a soldier, ex-soldier, he had PTSD from it, and he took his life. And the BBC printed a headline that said, man takes his life after joining Samuel Leeds community.
What?
That's what they said.
And then that must just stick forever. Like, how did that...
Well,
how did that land with the rest of the people in your community, though?
I mean, they're outraged. My community think it's... I think everybody now... At the time, my community were like, the BBC are disgusting, what a disgrace. Now, I think everybody thinks that. I think everybody just knows. If the government hate you, the way they get to you is through their mouthpiece, which is the BBC. And the BBC then did a documentary, a full-on documentary.
What was in the documentary?
It was they came to one of my courses and heard me speak and stuff where I said nothing wrong at all, but they just took little bits and then put eerie music over it.
Mm.
Very strange. And then I said things like, on my YouTube channel, I said, and if you're not subscribed, I'm going to come and punch you in the mouth as a joke. And they'd gone through hundreds of hours and found these little small clips and put eerie music over the top of it. And then also interviewed like two or three people out of the thousands of people they could find and said, did you make money? No, I didn't actually make any money. I went on Samuel's training and then ignored. If it was a dissertation, I'm a university student right now, it would have been an absolute fail because it was just such nonsense. And I was so desperate at the time to sit down with the presenter that ran the show and say, let's talk, man. Let's talk numbers. Let's talk facts. But of course, they don't want to do that. But luckily, I think most people can see through it now.
How did you feel in that moment, though? You seem pretty resilient, but to someone to put a headline like that must have hurt.
I was disgusted. Because, and also, I mean, the guy that decided to take his life, which is very sad, you know, very, 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 very sad and tragic, there was no link. So it's like, hang on a minute, what are you talking about? The inquest came out after the BBC did their show. No mention or anything, right? But then the BBC refused to do an update or say
anything. They refused to apologise.
Oh, yeah, they didn't apologise. No. There were some things that I managed to get them to retract. Some things. But no, they didn't apologise. They're the BBC. But anyway, that's the bad. There's a lot of good.
Yeah, of course.
There's a lot of love.
I'm interested in what you learn at biblical school.
But yeah, I learned a lot. I mean, in terms of biblical economics...
Just because taking it back to that moment and your first pastor said,
you
know, money's the evil, you know, you're overzealous.
Yeah.
Were you going in there with that frame of mind? Like, or what did the school teach you?
I don't think there's any such thing as overzealous for a start. And lacking of humility. I do get told that a lot. Oh, you're not humble. But it's like, the only reason I've managed to achieve what I've achieved and build what I've built is because I'm humble enough to be like, I don't know the answer. Now, I've achieved what I've achieved, and I'll talk about it. Most people that achieve success, they'll keep quiet about it, because for whatever reason, they're super quiet. Me, I'm vocal. I'll share what I've done, and I'll celebrate my successes.
But do you think then by you being vocal is what's made you a target? Because there are a lot of jealous people, like you're saying, you feel persecuted by the media.
I don't think it's jealous people, though. I think it's the media, because I talk about things that don't fit the status quo. Like, for example, the banking system, this education system, the fact that the entire system is designed and rigged for people to be, in my opinion, for people to be poor. And I talk about that.
Tell me more about that.
Well, everything is rigged. And I think that it's already happened. I mean, I've been talking about this for years, but to put it this way, 10 years ago, I worked at a food bank for a short time 10 years ago. You know a food bank?
Yeah, of course.
Where they give food to people, right? People that would come to the food banks 10 years ago would be drug addicts, homeless people that are destitute, and they'd come and they'd get free food. Now, if you look it up, the same food banks, the people that come to get food are nurses, are literally engineers. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course.
Now that's
the average
just,
Brit.
The average Brit?
Yeah.
The average Brit. So the system, which is go to school, work hard, do as you're told, don't answer back, and then get good exams so that that's going to help you get into college or uni and then finish and graduate uni and get your student debt and then get a job. Mm. And then when you've got a job, everything will be fine. And then get a promotion and buy a house and pay off the mortgage and retire. That is a scam. That does not work. So, you know, although I failed in school, in one sense, the people that I see now who succeed in school, they're the ones eating out of food banks. Because they succeeded. You know, we see people finishing university with degrees. And then what? It's a lie.
All of my friends that went to university afterwards struggled to find a job. Whereas I went straight into working. And I was okay.
I mean, there's a place for universities. I'm not bashing uni. I'm actually at university now. I'm studying.
What are you studying?
I'm studying law.
Oh, okay.
But that's just because I'm a lifelong learner.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoy learning. I'm not going to university. I know that going to university and studying law, like I'm doing, I'm in my second year now. I know, and I'm full time. But I know that the chances that to become a lawyer for people that even qualify, you're talking 16%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's that low.
Really?
Yeah. So again, the government, universities have a government megaphone behind them saying, go to uni, go to uni, go to uni. But if we knew the stats, if we just did basic maths, I was never too great at maths, but if we look at the average rent in London versus the average salary.
Does that make sense?
And then we go on ChatGPT, which is rigged, and ask it, how can I become wealthy? And it says, save, but live below your means. It's like, it doesn't work. The answer is not to say that. The answer is you need to find a way of making a load more money.
So where was the first moment when you were like, oh my God, this is rigged. Like something's not making sense here. All the things that we were told and groomed into thinking that this was the way of life is incorrect.
I think when I first saw £1 million cash in the bank, my bank, my money, and I'm like, wow. I realised the system was rigged because I realised at school they told me I was stupid. And I'm like, I literally got £1 million in my bank.
At what age?
25.
How did you get it?
From brokering property deals.
Because when I was reading some bits on your earlier life, you said actually you were quite unmotivated. And if you were going to look back on the life you've got now, you would be like, oh my God, there's no way that happened to me.
At school?
Yeah. So I wonder what flipped the switch from you being like a regular unmotivated child to this wildly hungry man.
Entering the real world and working for my dad, getting paid £25 a day. Because when you're at school, you just think, when I finish school, certainly as a kid like me who hates school, I can't wait to finish school. When school finishes, man, and I'll be free. And then when school finishes, you're not free because now you need a job.
Yeah.
And I realised that actually having a job is worse than school. School was easy. And that was a depressing moment because now I'm like, man, I'm working for my dad getting paid £25 a day and I'm making balloon animals at market stands for kids and my hands are all rubbery. So now you just got to keep going. This is worse than school. So I need to do something. And I Googled, my dad is keeping me poor.
Stop. Did you actually?
Yeah, I Googled my dad. I was desperate times.
And you're how old?
16.
Okay. And you're convinced your dad's keeping you
poor?
Yeah,
I was
convinced. But literally £25 a day back then wasn't bad money, no?
No, it was. It was. Because I was also having to get to like Leicester and go on the bus.
Okay.
And it was horrible. It was hard work. So yeah, it's pretty bad money. And it wasn't even every day. It was like, be available all the time just in case. Oh, you need it tomorrow. It was horrible. 3 months of that. And I'm like, nah, man. So I Googled my dad's keeping me poor. Came across the book by SEO. Because when I searched that, the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad came up. I don't know if you know the book.
Yeah, I've heard of it. I've not read it.
It's basically written by a guy called Robert Kiyosaki, who now I know a little bit personally. Like I've met him, had dinner and stuff. But that was the first book I actually read. And the thing that blew me away about that book was, man, maybe I'm not stupid, you know, because it talks about how school system is a scam and, you know, the whole... And I'm like, well, I failed in school. So then I went down to a property networking event, met a guy who charged me £3,000 to do some mentoring. Didn't have it, but found it. Everybody said it was a scam, but did it. And I went down a whole different route, a whole different world. And what I found in the business community is the people accepted it. In business, because if you go on social media, there's all this left and right and this, you know, race wars, culture wars, all this.
Polarizing stuff.
Yeah, there is. In business, no one cares. Yeah. If you go into a business meeting and there's 20 people and there's black people and there's white people and there's men and there's women, geez, there can be a transgender, no one cares. It's just, let's talk about business.
Let's make money.
Yeah, let's make money. Can you
bring value?
The common
goal is we're all in this room to make money.
Uh-huh. So I quickly realised when I was in those rooms, no one cares about the fact that I failed in school even. No one cares about the fact that I got a bit of an accent because I'm from the Midlands. No one cares about any of that. They just want to know, okay, so what can you provide? So I thought, man, maybe. So for me, that was like a new, and that's kind of where the challenge came from.
Because £3,000 is quite a big investment for a young kid that's got no money. What made you believe that this bloke was going to give you the golden ticket?
Well, I didn't have anything to lose, and he just told me, hey, yeah, I can show you what to do, and blah, 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 blah. One of the early mentors who charged me money was a guy called Tony Crook.
Yeah.
And I remember my friends and family saying to me, Samuel, his name is literally Crook. And you just dropped him three bags? But again, later I realised, well, hang on. He's made 100 million. If I'd have gone to business school at university, you'd have clapped me. That's the brainwashing of society. So why are you clapping me to go to business university to learn from a guy who never had a business? You know how many people clap me for going to university? Oh, you're studying law. Wow. I'm like, shut up, man. Why weren't you clapping me when I was 17 years old going on property courses? You know how many people clap me when I lost a bit of weight? I used to be very... Last time I was here, I was actually very fat. Lost a bit of weight. I was like, well done. Be quiet. Why are you clapping me for not being fat? People clap people for the wrong reasons and don't clap them for the right... You know, and when they should be clapping them, don't. So... Yeah, but when I realised it was rigged was when I got £1 million in the bank, £1.19 million.
So speed me up. You go and meet Tony and then all of a sudden you're a millionaire in how long and what did you do?
7 years.
Okay. And what happened in those 7 years business-wise?
So I got a bunch of houses.
Yeah.
Which I secured on do you know when you get a car and you can't afford it, so you do it on purchase by contract?
Okay.
I learned how to do that with houses.
Was that a thing then, or were there not many people
doing it? Well, not really. People know it's a thing now, but it is a thing.
So what does that mean for anyone who's listening?
That means that you can buy a house.
Yeah.
You pay a £1 deposit just to make it legal. And then you can buy it for an agreed price down the line in like 5 years, 10 years, whenever you agree.
Right. I want to buy this house next door. Yeah. Yeah? It's £100,000.
Yeah.
I put my pound down, but I'm going to pay £100,000 in 5 years.
Yeah.
What happens to me between now and the 5 years? Surely they want money.
Yes. So normally you'll agree a small monthly rent, which will mean that for them, it just washes its face. Because normally they just want to see the back of it, but it's a little something. But then you find a way of renting it for a higher amount. So you might go next door. Oh, they only want £1,000 a month. But if I do it as a nice studio and can do this and this, I could maybe get £3,000 a month. And now that £2,000 a month you're making, you save it. And at the end of the 5 years, you use it to buy it.
Interesting. And the people that own it are just getting a small percentage every month. And then they get the chunk at
the end.
Yeah,
it's whatever you agree. Yeah. So my first one was a property on Cleveway Road. Actually, no, it was my second. Pershore Road in Birmingham. I agreed £500 a month. And I agreed to buy it for £8,000-£9,000 in 10 years' time.
My dad's in property and he's got started probably...
He'll probably do this then.
Probably.
He will. In fact, you said your dad's got a jet, right?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, he'll do this. All rich people buy houses this way. Your dad, ask him as soon as we finish.
I would be very surprised. Should we ring him
Ring him up right now. Ring him up right now.
Right, okay.
Ask him if he ever buys properties using an option. Using a purchase option.
Just giving you a heads up, I think he's drunk in Dubai.
That's fine. Ring him and ask him.
What's it called?
A purchase option agreement. So do you ever use purchase option agreements when you buy properties?
I wonder if it's a pound.
I bet.
Dad, I'm in the middle of a podcast. You're live, so please don't swear. What am I asking him?
Why would I do that?
Dad, who's your favourite child, first of all?
Who's my favourite child? Of course it's you. Everyone knows that.
Okay, yeah.
Ask him if he's ever bought or knows about buying properties.
Have you ever bought a property?
Using a purchase option agreement.
Using a purchase option agreement.
Option for what? You can option it for many reasons. Option for planning,
an option to buy.
Whatever.
An option to buy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There we go. He owns a jet.
Okay. Right, Dad.
Okay, good.
Love you. Bye.
See you later. Ain't you. Bye-bye.
No,
of course. No, but people, here's the thing. They'll never tell you this in school. They'll never tell you this in the media.
Well, I left school. I went to private school and I wouldn't know how to get a mortgage.
No, but this isn't even about getting a mortgage. This is
like basics.
This is about buying properties on a purchase option is basic. It's like when you get a car, of course you're going to do it with a purchase option. If I talk about getting a purchase option on a house, your dad wouldn't because he's wealthy. He'll be like, yeah, man, I do the same thing too. And I called it. But if I say it to the average person, they go, oh, that sounds risky. Hang on, you'll do it on a car, which is a liability. You'll buy a sofa, buy now, pay later, no problem. You'll get into debt to all that bad stuff. But when you're buying a house where you have an option to buy it down the line and it's an appreciating asset where you can squeeze the cash flow from it, that's what rich people do. But poor people will say, nah, that sounds a bit risky.
But where's the benefit for the property owner?
Because, like, for an example, my property that I did it with, guy buys a house for $8,000-$9,000.
Yeah.
He's renting it as a HMO, but he's mismanaging it and he's busy and he's got a bad tenant who's not paying. And then it turns out that there's a drug dealer in there and he's like, oh, I wish I hadn't bought this. He wants to sell it, but everyone's scared because the market's dipped. It's now only worth $80,000. He bought it for $89,000. He's in negative equity. I go, look, I'll buy it for $89,000. I'll take all the hassle off you. I'll become the landlord and I'll give you £500 a month guaranteed every month for the next 10 years.
Well, there'll be some people saying that you're extorting desperate people.
Well, it's not extorting desperate people. It's about finding someone who's got a problem and fixing that problem.
So I'm sure people learn about this on your courses, but how do people go about, because that deal almost seems like, not crazy, but like too crazy good to be your
okay.
true. Like,
it's a good question. So here's how you do it. Go on Rightmove.
Yeah.
Search for properties within an area and search from not lowest price or highest price. Search from oldest listed. And they got all these properties that can't sell. And the reason they can't sell is because they're overpriced. But the reason they're overpriced is because they can't drop the price because they've got a big, fat, high mortgage on them. Contact them and say, look, you need to sell your house for $150,000. I can see it's been on the market for a year. I'll buy it for the price you want, but I'll pay you on my terms, which is in 5 years. But in the meantime, I'll give you £500 a month. What are you saying? If you do that 50 times, you're going to get a deal. And rather than saving up $50,000 and then paying stamp duty and going down the normal trap, just do that.
So that's where you made your first?
No, that's not how I made my first million. That's how I built my portfolio initially. But how I made my million was finding, because I was coming across so many deals that were brilliant, but I couldn't buy them because I was too broke. So instead of just flushing them down the toilet, I would be like, it's a really good deal, but I'm too poor to buy it. I know this guy that I met, Tony, he wants a deal as well. Tony, I got this deal. And he's like, oh, I'll tell him about it. He's like, oh, that sounds great. And he'll just give me $5,000.
But it seems like, even my dad says this when he talks about property as well. Like, he got involved in a time where it was so much easier. Like, at 30 years of age, he owned his own home. Like, that is completely unachievable for any 30-year-old I know now to go out and be able to get their own home. And with the property market becoming more difficult, would you still have gone into property if you were 20-odd starting now? Or what would you have done differently?
Well, your dad's absolutely right. And what's going to happen is right now it is more difficult than it was. And the reason for that is because right now, average salary in year 2000, do you know what average salary was in year 2000, would you guess?
A month?
No, a year. Just an average annual salary in year 2000, 25 years ago.
£18,000.
Very close. £20,000. Now it's £30,000. Across the UK.
Okay.
Yeah? London is a bit higher.
But still 25 years later, that's quite a long time.
Right. So it's gone up by 50% in 25 years.
Yeah.
However, average house prices have gone up by 236%. So what's happened is the average person now can't afford to buy because house prices are just going up. Everything's going up. Inflation's killing everybody. The only thing that's not going up is salaries. So what's going to happen is over the next few years, as I believe, interest rates drop a little bit more. And I believe house prices are about to, I'm very bullish. I think house prices are about to go up a lot. Not house values, house prices. And there's a difference. But when house prices go up, people's going to be wiped out. Like now, you live in London, right? Do you own your property?
Not this one.
Okay. So the average person in London that lives in central London like you do, that owns their own home, that goes, oh yeah, that's my house. Three-bedroom house with a garden in central London. They either are really rich and their dad owns a jet or they bought 20 years ago.
Yeah, now, literally, anyone at my son's school who owns their house, it's been passed down in a family.
Right.
Like, because you couldn't have afforded to buy in like Islington or central London because you couldn't.
Now it's dumb. Now it's just like, come on, don't be stupid. You can't just buy a house in London. You're crazy, right? That's going to happen across the entire country.
So who's going to buy the houses then? Who's going to fill them?
Corporations are. Big companies, BlackRock, Lloyds Bank, rich oil companies from Abu Dhabi.
What does this mean to the average Brit?
It means that you're never going to be able to own a property if you don't do it right now.
And what's the solution for them to do it right now then?
Is to learn to make a ton of money and then strategically dump that money into property, or be creative like I did and do it on options and stuff like that, which you can do. It's a bit tricky to figure it, but what would you rather do? Figure out how to do that and be like, hang on, if I can buy a car on a purchase hire contract, I need to figure out how to do that with a house. I need to get the right lawyer. I need to make a bunch of calls. That sounds like work. You know what I'll do instead? I'll just save 100 grand. Like, I know which one I'd rather do. I'd rather do that than work a job and save 100 grand.
Just for context for people listening, how much money have you earned from doing this, from property?
Many millions.
Come on, you can't tell us.
I've made many millions.
10 million, 20 million, 15, 8, 9, 7.
I last had my net worth valued in 2021.
So quite a while ago, though.
Yes. Yeah, a long time ago. And my net worth, that's my net.
Yeah.
That was 20 million. Now, I don't talk about it because I don't want to put a target on my back. I have enough of a target on my back as it is. And also, it's meaningless because the difference between 20 million, 50 million, 100 million, 200 million, it's kind of like, it just becomes about ego. So I'm more obsessed with the impact I'm making, the message I'm bringing.
I listened somewhere that you were getting like £500,000 a month through your property company. Is that right?
I do all right. I mean, if you go on my, right now, if you go on my company's house, I've got quite a few companies on there. Samuel Lee's Developments, Samuel Lee's this, Samuel Lee's that. Most of them have got my name behind it. You can see I've got many millions in many companies. But yeah, you know what? Certain things are a bit private. Unless someone's wanting to buy shares in my company, they have no right to know all the ins and outs. Do you know what I mean? Like, people sit me down on the wall and say, so what are you making? And what's that percentage of that is profit?
I'm interested. How do you spend your money? Because there's enough of it to go around. Like, how do we spend it?
I invest it into things that are important to me and I reinvest it back into my business. So like my education company, for example, last year did about 20 million in turnover.
That's mental. So let's get onto this. So for anyone who doesn't know, Samuel does training courses.
Yes.
Do you want to explain to the audience a little bit more about
I just mentor people and I have a community called The Academy. So if people, like for example, if you want to get into property, you need a lawyer, you need an accountant, you need a team. Do you know how expensive it is to get access to these people? And you know how hard it is to find them? And do you know how long you have to wait to get an appointment with them? So I've put together a community where it's just like, look, man, you got speed dial access to my lawyer. Oh, and it's paid for. You have to pay.
This sounds too good to be true.
Well, you have to pay 12 grand to be part of the club.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
you get what for the 12 grand?
Oh, you just get unlimited mentoring. You get dinners, you get training, you get just everything. It's just like you get all the money that I make from my own property business. I put a percentage back into the academy and say, if you can't get lending, you can borrow it from me.
At a rate, obviously.
Yeah, at a rate, yeah. But what I'll do is I'll make sure that the deal that I'm lending them the money for is so good that they can do it up, sell it, and then they can make a nice profit, and then I get paid a bit as well. I charge 1% a month.
Okay.
So it's like bridging. So basically, that's the academy. And the academy is awesome, but last year we did just shy, I think it was like 19.6 million of turnover, but the profit was none. It was zero.
What? Sorry, you turned over 19.6 million and there was no profit?
Correct.
How does that work?
Because my education company is very expensive because I spend over £1 million a year just on my mentors and the venues and the dinners, and it's expensive.
There'll be people listening to this saying you're a very busy, wealthy man. Uh-huh. That amount of time and energy that you've put in for essentially zilch, mm-hmm. What's the reason you're doing that?
Because most companies, with my education company, I'm trying to build a legacy. And most companies, if you look at Uber, if you look at Amazon, all the massive companies, they didn't make profit for years and years and years. And this is what people don't understand. People think, like, oh, I want to, they're looking at making a quick buck. But you can't look at business like that. So I'm more interested in the impact it makes than I am trying to, and I don't need to make money from it because I've got my property business.
Yeah, so what was the inspiration for starting that? Because it's a lot of hard work, like you say.
It was when I got chucked out of Bible college. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And I felt completely betrayed. And I realized that being a Christian in business, I was like a misfit. So I set up a networking event, like a misfits. And it was for Christian business people.
Okay.
And it was called Training Kings. And that's how I got into training. It's like, if you're a misfit, come and join the club. and let's work together. That's how I got into it.
And then that rolled out to doing the courses and things.
Yeah, because people would come and be part of the network, and then they'd be like, oh, can you teach us this? Or we need to, and I'd start putting different things on. So that's how it started, yeah.
So you spoke about earlier, you didn't want to say about how much money you've got, but what is the getting there for you? Like, what is the end goal? Like, what are you chasing towards there? Is there a certain figure in your head?
No. No. I'm not doing what I'm doing to try and make money. I'm doing what I'm doing so that when I die, it's like, oh man, remember that dude? You know what I mean?
Legacy.
Yeah, legacy. Because honestly, there's no difference between when you get past a certain point, what difference does it make? This shirt cost me £40. I'm not wearing any jewellery.
Why?
Because I have no interest. People buy me jewellery all the time. I don't feel comfortable wearing it. I feel comfortable in these jeans. These jeans are about £20. I came in a decent car. I drive a Range Rover. It's all right. I don't have any ridiculously expensive cars. So for me, it doesn't really do anything for me. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
There's nothing really that I could buy materially that will be like, oh, wow. I mean, I do have a nice house in Dubai, you know? But
didn't you put up that it was like £500,000 a year to rent?
Yes.
Why did you not buy?
Because, to be quite honest, it would wipe me out. I know I'm wealthy, yeah. But like, it would be very difficult to get finance. I'd have to buy cash. And the houses like that start at £20 million.
Jesus.
And cash, £20 million, putting that into a property just because where I might want to move in a year anyway, it didn't make any commercial sense. I'd rather rent it for £500,000, just over £500,000, than buy it. So,
well, let's talk about that then. What was, you're saying you felt outcast from the UK. What was the move when you were like, do you know what, Amanda, get the kids, we're out of here, I'm done with this place. Was there something significant?
Yeah, there was actually. Education system, some of the stuff that there were. They were giving my little girl books, like, with weird stuff in, sexual...
Not the trans stuff.
Not the trans stuff. Listen, I've got no problem with trans people. I love trans people. It's just, I don't believe that children should be taught about sex education.
How old's your daughter, for
my
record?
My daughter was, at the time, was six, right? And she got this reading book, and it was about, like, it was just, I didn't like it, right? I burned the book in front of her. I said, get daddy a lighter. I put the book in flames, and then I said, you're not going back to that school. I wrote to the school and said, what's this, man? What's going on with this book? And they said, well, it's not sex education. That doesn't start until next year. And I'm like, no, man, she ain't
going
back.
What seven-year-old needs
ridiculous.
To know about
sex? I know, exactly. And listen, man, as I say, like, I love gay people. I have many people that I work with that are gay. Trans people, there's no issues. Do what you want, man. I'll celebrate you for doing what you want. But I just don't believe in teaching children about sex education.
Any kind of sex education. No. Doesn't matter what it is.
Or always wear a condom and they're like 11. It's like, no, don't.
Well, it doesn't make sense either. The legal age for sex isn't even six. Is 16 anyway, so that doesn't make sense.
And that was part of what pushed me over the line. And also just the fact that the school education failed me, and even though I was sending my kids to private school.
So how long ago was that?
That was about 18 months ago.
And had you and Amanda been having the discussions about home education already?
No, we thought they'll be fine in private school, actually. We thought if they're in a private Christian school,
yeah,
they'll be fine.
You would think that.
But we were wrong. Messed up.
So then all of a sudden, you two go away, you make a joint decision to home educate your children.
No, we didn't make a joint decision. I made a decision there and then on the spot to protect my family. They ain't going back to school ever.
What'd she say?
She said, I support whatever you say. And then we built a school.
So when do you say you just built a school for your kids? Like, what do you mean?
No, as in like we got a bit of land in between my house and my brother's house. We built a little house, like a little classroom.
Okay.
And then I sent, and then we hired some of our favourite teachers, put them on full-time salary. And then I send my kids there. My brother sends his kids. My sister sends, like, the family.
Sorry, this is like my dream.
Is
amazing.
Is
yeah, because I've had so many people in here about homeschooling.
Now, homeschooling is hard.
But actually, when I sit down with them, they're like, no, we're not sitting there reading books to our kids all day. You send them to the relevant classes.
Yeah, what you do is you hire full-time brilliant teachers. And
but there are some people that can't afford to do that.
So if you haven't got money, you're screwed. In fact, if you haven't got money, you're screwed in every regard. You're going to get a digital ID. You're going to end up being a complete slave. You're going to end up living in communist England. You're going to end up not being able to say what you want and what you think on social media. Otherwise, you'll be turned off. You're going to end up having to be a complete yes man to the government. And you will suffer. And so will your kids. And so will your kids' kids. So let's just say it as it is. You have to get rich. That not just for the schooling, for just everything. So I just want to be real clear on that. You have to get rich. And for your kids, that's a small part of it.
There might be people listening to this go, like, I'm just happy with my average salary and taking my kids to school and come back. I don't want to get rich. What does that mean for me?
That's fine. You can eat out of food banks in another 3 years.
So what do you think will happen to
I think it already is. I mean, I don't have to be a prophet. Look at what's happened over the last 10 years. That's going to continue happening. Inflation is going to continue going up. I mean, I just got back from Zimbabwe, yeah? I don't know if you saw it. Did you see my video?
No, I don't think so.
So in Zimbabwe, my wife's parents, yep, I just call them mum and dad, they bought a house 27 years ago. So okay, just before year 2000, for 1.6 million Zimbabwean dollars.
Which is like what in British pounds?
At the time, it was about 300,000 pounds.
So it's a lot of money.
Yeah. Just like a good house. They're wealthy. Yeah. So they bought that house. But then what happened was, there was so much hyperinflation that 1.6 million Zimbabwean dollars became worth so little that when I first went to Zimbabwe as a teenager, it would cost 1.6 million Zimbabwean dollars to catch a taxi. So you buy a house and then fast forward 10 years, that's a taxi ride.
That is mental.
Yeah. So in other words, in England, the average house is what? 270,000 pounds. That'd be like in 10 years time, you get on a taxi to go from one side of London to the other side of London, they go, that's 270,000 pounds. That was what happened in Zimbabwe. And it's scary times because that's what we've seen here. But people don't realise it because they don't understand economics, they don't understand inflation. But that's what's happened. The reason people are so poor right now is because rents are going up 10% a year because of inflation. House prices, house values aren't going up. 100 years ago, you could buy a house in England with 10 pieces of gold, 10 golden coins.
Mental.
Now, today, you can buy a house with 10 pieces of gold. So what's gone up? Inflation. So the price of the house has gone up because the money, the Great British Pound, has just lost its buying power. So people are working hard for something. You said, what about people like, oh, I just go to work and make a decent salary and my kids are happy. Yeah, but that you're working hard for something that's being printed. And the more it's printed, the less... At what point are you going to end up going, you know what? I ain't doing that for £3,000. Mm-hmm. If your average rent in London is £2,220, which it is.
It's a lot of money, you know.
It's a lot of money. And you're working for three. At what point are you going to continue going, you know what? I'm happy to work in my job for £3,000.
I've always thought this, like, even when it comes to benefits, because, not being funny, people can go and have children and earn more money, yeah, and have a nicer income than going to work. Like,
but that's not because benefits is high. That's because incomes are so ridiculously low.
100%. But sometimes the marginal difference, like even, for example, a colleague of mine at Morgan Stanley, like she was like well paid, yeah? And she ended up having two kids. And by the time they paid two nursery fees, which in central London was like £1,900 per child per month.
Yeah, you can't.
Plus her job. By the time that she went to work and back, it was like an extra £150 a month. So it didn't make sense for her to then work. But then she's not putting into the economy and it doesn't make sense. And I think this is a completely different conversation, but even for women, it's so difficult because you're asked to do so many things and then the pride and joy of your children end up taking a back seat because you're expected to drive in all of these things.
It's impossibility. I mean, we've got a nanny and a cleaner, we've got a chef, and we've got four kids. But I can't imagine what life would be like with, I mean, you'd just be doing errands all
the
time.
Does Amanda work?
Amanda helps me on the business, and she's also obviously, you know, got four kids.
That's what I mean.
Busy. But no, she doesn't have a job.
So how does that work then in terms of like money? Will you give her an allowance? Is she allowed to spend certain things?
She, believe it or not, she actually controls the finance.
Does she?
Yeah. She runs the entire finance side of the business and she's very responsible and I trust her completely. I bring all the money in and then she safeguards it, looks after it. So No, there's so no allowances. Would, so or
say you'd not say you weren't wealthy. Like, it's almost impossible for women to get by and do this.
Yeah, say you weren't wealthy. Let's say you were a completely different person. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Wealth is who I am.
Like you say, wealth is part of who you are. There must have been some obstacles in your life when you've been put on your ass.
Oh, massively. Yeah, they have.
Like what?
Well, I mean, from more recent years, you mean?
Yeah, like when you really thought, like, this hurts. Like, I'm struggling here.
Well, I've had deals that have gone bad, which have hurt my pocket. But I think the thing that's been the most difficult is the attacks from the media completely defaming me. I mean, to the point where in 2019, it was so bad that if I had got stabbed, people would have probably clapped.
And what triggered that?
So in 2019, there was a guy. I mean, I was getting investigated by BBC, The Guardian. They were all trying to find stuff on me, but there was nothing. There was no hook, but they just didn't like me. And they would. I mean, I had Channel 4 come to one of my speeches.
I saw that.
Yeah.
And do an investigation.
Yeah. But there was nothing they could say. They just didn't like me. But rather than just being truthful and saying, this guy doesn't stand for what we think he's a knob. Yeah, all we think he's a knob.
Yeah.
Which is great.
That's
cool.
Fine. Yeah.
You think I'm a knob? Fantastic. I'll laugh about it. But there's nothing. And I was getting a lot of people as well that were reporting me. I was getting even people like Lord Sugar. You know Lord Sugar?
Yeah.
He made a video about me.
Saying what?
Basically just a nasty video about me. But just totally unprovoked. Just totally unprovoked. So I was like...
But what had you done to put yourself in the media's firing line?
Nothing. I just got very, very rich. And we're talking about it publicly and was getting thousands and thousands of people every single month coming to hear my story and listen and take lessons, and everyone was winning and everyone was happy. When you're standing on stage, like, I tell you an interesting story. When I had £1 million in my bank, 1.19 million pounds, and I'm like, wow, this is interesting. I went to the bank and I asked them if I could take it out. Now, the reason I wanted to take all the money out was because I wanted to take a picture of it. Put it on Instagram.
Yeah.
At the time, Facebook. Because I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
I'm like a young kid. I'm 25. I've got a million in the bank. I'm
you
like, man, I work for that. I want to see it.
Yeah.
On the screen, it looks cool, but I want to see it. I was actually...
I want to touch it. I want to feel it.
Right.
I want to sleep with it.
Do you know what I was actually going to do? And this is probably a bit embarrassing. It's immature. I wanted to, as like a bit of a novelty, whatever, I wanted to take it out in nice crisp notes, and I wanted to put it all in my bath. And I want to see what it looks like and like have a joke around, put it in a suitcase, James Bond. Like me and my wife have a little joke, have a little play, and then put it back in. So I went to the bank and asked them if they'd take it out. And they were like, well, what's it? What do you want it for? And I was embarrassed to be like, oh, I just want to take a bath in it. You know what I'm saying? So I just said, look, well, it's my money. Do I need to give you a reason? Yes, you need to give us a reason. What do you need it for? I'll be honest, I want to take some pictures of it. You know what I'm saying? But I'll put it back in. And they said, we don't have it. We don't have it. I'm like, oh, well, where is it? Huh? No, we don't. Ah, this is weird. Now, I went home, and then I thought, you know what? I'm going to go back to the bank, and I'm going to secretly record, because this is interesting. It started getting me thinking about money more. So I went to the bank and asked them, hey, can I take out? I'm like, oh, it's you again. Oh, pulled me backstage, stripped me like a criminal. And they were like, investigating me, interrogating me. And I was secretly recording, and I uploaded the footage. And YouTube took it down. And the bank closed me down. My bank closed me down. And I also got many legal letters. I've had so many run-ins with banks. I mean, I've had so many of my students that have bought banks. We've bought banks. And then we've kicked them out and turned it into apartments and, like, made videos about it. And the banks just detest me.
It's always made...
It's another thing I get really irritated about. Right now, I've got £6 million in my bank. I know that money, they're investing it. They should be very grateful to have me as a customer, but for some reason they can't stomach it. So the banks constantly, I just had a report last week. We want to know, they interrogate me, they ask about my own money. My own money is not safe in the bank. I'm removing it, I'm taking it out of the bank. I'll leave a tiny bit in. I might leave £500,000, just, you know, and that's, I know people will laugh, oh, that's not a tiny little bit, but you got to remember I've got a lot of overheads, yeah?
Yeah.
So, because I've never felt more conscious about my money being in the bank than I am right now. And that £6 million is only in there. It's not like I'm saving it, put it in the bank, just to do overheads. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you got
I've always felt like as well, you know, like we're just living in a time of such a shift. Like I feel massive. Like nothing will stop tomorrow. Like we all wake up in the morning, internet goes down. You go in your bank, what's to say no one's got anything? It's literally a number
absolutely.
On a screen.
That's going
to
happen.
So how will you be able to get your money out
then? You won't. Your money will turn
to you're going to start getting yours out. So how will you do that?
Oh, no, you can get, right now, you can get your money. You can't get it out in cash.
Right, okay.
But you can transfer it into other stuff, other assets. You can transfer it into business, gold. You can transfer it to crypto, for instance. Very difficult, though.
Because £6 million sounds like a lot of money for you just to have floating in the bank. I thought you'd have put it to work.
No, because I've got, that's not a lot of money because I've got overhead. So, if you should probably have a few months worth of expenses in your bank.
Okay.
So for me, that's not that many.
And then is there a certain figure you like it at and then the rest you just go and...
Yeah, but I'm changing my appetite now because now before it's been around five million.
Yeah.
It's generally like, yeah, if I've got 5 million in the bank, that's nice. And then it's a little bit liquid and it's there, but it's actually not liquid. That's the problem. It's more liquid in property. I let me tell you something interesting. I've had some big expenses to come up, all right? Bomb, I've got to pay this. I need £1 million for this. I'm like, okay, no problem. I got it in the bank. Oh, the bank won't give it to me. But I got 5 million. No. What? Too many questions. But I just want to move it. No, you're moving into a different country and we need to know this, and we need... And it's been quicker for me to sell one of my houses at auction, get the money to a solicitor's account, and then woof, ship that off to a different country, Dubai or Africa, where I want it to go, than it is to get it out of my own bank. So if people that say money is liquid in a bank, is actually not true.
And is that what worries you as well with this whole Brit ID coming through and the control and
everything
becoming very authoritarian?
It doesn't worry me. It worries the heck out of me for the average person. Yes.
What do you think that means for the average person?
I know exactly what it means. I mean, at the moment, we have a passport, a driver's license, maybe a bank account, maybe two bank accounts. We have a Twitter and a Facebook account, and we have all our different things, and our insurance and our different cards and credit card and this, and everything's all in different places. So if you lose one, if your passport goes, okay, you might not be able to leave the country, but at least you can drive, you still got your driver's license.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if it's all on one digital place and it's just, oh, actually, bop, computer says no. Now you can't do anything. You can't access your bank. You can't buy, you can't sell, you can't drive, you can't leave the country. And I think that and the fact that they say, this is another thing, it's two things that really worry me about the Brit ID. The first thing that really worries me is the fact that they say things like, oh, it's to help illegal immigration. What?
Bullshit.
If you want to stop illegal immigration, we can stop illegal immigration. If I was Prime Minister, it would be sorted like that. And now I'm very young and I know it's complex, but it's not that difficult. It's not that difficult. So this, you don't need to do the Brit ID to control. It's complete farce. That's the first thing that worries me, the fact that they're being so disingenuous and so dishonest. Because if someone's being dishonest with you in a relationship...
You don't trust anything they say.
No, you can't trust anything. No. Can't trust anything now. Oh, that's weird. If I say to you, oh, I need to go, I've got a family emergency, and then I go and you see that I'm actually just playing pool and having a bit... Now I can't trust anything you say. That's weird. Mm. So that's the first thing. I don't trust anything the government say. Second thing is, digital ID. They say, oh, we're... Keir Starmer just announced it literally. It was only a month or two ago.
Yeah, you know, 3 million people petitioned against it.
Yes.
I think it's over 3.4 now. And the government's response was like, yeah, we heard you, but we're doing it anyway.
No, but it's not that we're doing it anyway. It's that they've already done it. Mm. It's done. And it was done with Conservative.
Because in this month, now November, you have to, in order to start get a company on Companies House and to be a director, you have to have a digital ID.
I tried to change something on my Companies House recently. I can't remember what it was now. I just changed an address or changed something. And in order to make an amendment, it said, oh, we just need you to fill this out and this out. It was digital ID. So
what did you do in that instance?
I didn't do it. I'm like...
But I don't know what the situation was.
I'll close them down if I have to. I will close down all my companies. I don't care. I've got enough money in my overseas offshore. I've got accounts all over the world. I've got trusts. I'm good.
So does this mean that you will probably just end up starting pulling things out of the UK, which means for...
No. Because my entities that own my UK properties aren't in the UK anyway. So I won't pull things from the UK. I'll keep my assets in the UK, but the entity that owns it might not be in the UK.
Because I'm just wondering at what cost it's going to come to everyone else, because the reason they get us is on ease. You know, like everyone had the COVID jab because they wanted to go on holiday.
Everyone
wanted to go on holiday. Anyone I know was like, oh, do you know what, babe? Fuck it. I've been indoors 6 months. I want to go away. No one was like, yeah, I want to be protected. By then, we've all had it at least like once or twice.
Yeah, exactly. That's why we're
lazy. But we're lazy.
This is why I want a plane. I don't have a private plane yet because it's so expensive. And especially when you're wanting to go from Dubai to UK.
Yeah, it's a huge journey.
It's a huge journey, which means huge plane. Which
means huge fuel.
Which means you're talking 100, 150 million pounds for a plane. So it's huge. So I'm not quite there at the moment. However, every other aspect of me, I'm free.
Mm.
If I had a plane, that would be the only thing that would be quite nice. Do you know what, though? It doesn't matter, because I do have very close friends that have got planes. And your dad has a plane. So we can all jump on his plane.
Oh, not anymore.
How many people did it hold?
8, 9.
Okay, so it's quite a small plane.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, I'm not hating.
It'll be bigger, like, what do you mean?
It's bigger than my plane. You know, but I think, you know, it's no good fear-mongering and telling people how bad it's going to be without a solution. And the solution is, you have to have a solution. And the solution is to not rely on your job. That's the first thing, because your employers will be the first people that will say, you have to do this. And that's why I came out and did a video recently which said, I employ over 50 people. Guess what? You're not going to need digital ID to work for me. I don't care. But then they'll make it impossible, because they might make it illegal if you don't.
Yeah, and then what happens? So if they, which is the likelihood, they'll probably say, if you want to employ someone, we need proof because of illegal immigration that you have their digital ID number.
This is why I think they're going to ban cryptocurrency. I think they're going to, I mean, China have done it. China have banned Bitcoin and unbanned it 14 times.
I did not know that.
I think that the government are going to make it. And what they'll do, it's always the same old, isn't it? It's the problem, reaction, solution. Right? And this is what we just saw with illegal immigration. And I almost felt like I fell into the trap a little bit, you know, because they were talking about illegal immigration and I even spoke about it.
Well, hold on. Didn't you refuse to turn one of your hotels in too? Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
So you were asked, you've got a hotel.
Yep.
And you were offered, what, 40 grand a month, was
35.
It? 35. 35 grand a month, which is probably more than what you was making as a hotel or not.
Probably, at the time, it would have been left me with more money in my pocket. Because
that's
they,
what
they
I mean.
Offered to pay the maintenance, expenses, everything. There's no marketing. It's just straight 35 grand.
They cash. Fill it. You've got all, done.
Yeah, correct.
So you get approached. Most people would say yes.
They would.
Especially given the climate that we're living
99%
in the UK.
Of people would say yes.
So this comes, lands on your desk.
Yeah.
Do you think about it?
Well, I didn't know at first, because the way they do it's sneaky. So they didn't say, oh, we want to house illegal immigrants or even asylum seekers. It was just vulnerable people. And I house vulnerable people in some of my other houses. I've got buildings and HMOs and stuff where I do house homeless people. We've got people that were soldiers and now they're on the streets, and so there's a lot of good charities which I rent my properties to at a discounted rate. When they offered 35 grand, they'll pay all the maintenance and no voids for vulnerable people. I'm like, oh, okay. So I asked, when you say vulnerable people, what do you do exactly? What's the nature of your charity or your business, or what is it that you do? Oh, we get paid by the council, and the council pay us direct, and then we pay you, and we have people that are vulnerable and people that are, okay, that's great, but who were the vulnerable people? And they said, oh, well, you know, people that, you know, are seeking asylum. And, oh, that's when I'm like, okay. And listen, it's not appropriate, because the particular hotel in question, Willingham House, is like a nice boutique hotel. I mean, even commercially, I don't want to sit here and act like I'm an absolute saint and I'm like, oh, I should know on principle. Because even though that's true, I did say on principle, I would have been hated in that village, man. That village would have hated me, and that would have then affected my how I sleep, how I feel. I wouldn't have been able to live with myself by turning it into some refuge for asylum seekers when it's a lovely building in a village, and the villagers were so excited. Oh, we're going to do weddings. Yeah, we're going to do weddings. And we're going to have it as a hotel back. Yeah, I'm going to restore it. Oh, no, actually, it's going to be asylum seekers. Do you know what I mean? So I said no.
Had you thought about it before you said no, or was it just, I feel like in my gut, this isn't right?
I just thought it was not right. I did sleep on it.
Yeah.
But I felt nah. So I said no. But then we were having a meeting about it with my marketing team and management team and the directors at the hotel. And someone across the room said, oh, I think we should just ring them and entertain the offer. And because it's 35. And that's when I got annoyed. And I'm like, I started, like, you know, in my usual theatrical self.
Getting emotional about it. Yeah.
And that was when I thought, you know what? Let me make a video. And I made a spontaneous video where I stood outside the hotel and said, they asked me, blah, 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 and I did that video.
What did you say for people that are listening?
So
got
what
an
I
idea
said
properly.
Is I said, I was offered £35,000 per month to house illegal immigrants in this hotel. And you know what I said? No. That was basically the video. And then I got called, people called me out because they said it's not actually illegal immigrants because technically, but my attitude is, if you're coming into a country with no visa, no passport, no, that's illegally.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you can split hairs and say, because of international law, technically the term is whatever. My book, that's illegal. I'm not a politician. It's illegal. So I put that video out. That's when Elon Musk reshared it.
Oh, but that was so exciting.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was. And he said I was a good man. Elon Musk did, which I was like, cool. You know what I mean? He's the richest man
that
in the world.
That is cool.
He's the richest man in the world. And Andrew Tate, people like that were like jumping on, sharing and commenting positively, and which was great.
Did you get any abuse though from like any woke?
Not really. Because people agree.
Which is so interesting.
It's turned, man.
Yeah. The tide has so turned.
It has. Like, when thank God.
I interviewed Tommy. I was like one of the first people to interview him last year, like when he was first allowed Twitter. And literally everyone, and even at the time, my agent was like, this we don't think is a good idea. And I, you know, we had a really challenging conversation. I opened with like people told me to talk to you because you're a racist. Like, oh, you're a racist. Like, I actually been online and struggling to find actual racist things that you've said. But the tide had turned so much where there was actual sense in what people were saying. It doesn't mean anyone's racist for not wanting illegal immigration in their town.
Yeah, you know, a lot of immigrants that have come in the hard way and have had to work with, like my wife is an immigrant, and people go, oh, it's ironic because your wife's an immigrant. It's like, hang on, you absolute buffoon. My wife's not had a single penny given from the government. Neither of us, her entire family, ever. So she's not come to take. She's come and built businesses. You're renting her properties, paying rent, saying thank you that my application was accepted, Mrs. Leeds. So she ain't coming here illegally and then getting 4,000. Do you know that's what they get? £4,000 a month is what the government give to these companies to just for the housing. So the companies that rent from the individuals, we have huge budgets. Now, if you're on benefits and you're English and you've worked hard and something happened and you're on benefits, you're getting about £1,000. So you're getting four times as much. And Home Office are a complete joke. And it takes years while they investigate to see if they're actually an asylum seeker or not. The whole thing is a shambles. And I love immigration. I mean, I live in a mixed household. You know, my wife is black, my kids are mixed, I got loads of students and staff who are immigrants. You could argue I'm an immigrant because I live in Dubai for much of the year, and I think that UK should be like Dubai. In Dubai we have open borders, but there are no benefits.
Yeah, because you wouldn't want to come then.
Correct. Yeah. So open, you can't have welfare and open borders at the same time. You have to choose. Are you gonna have welfare or are you going to have open borders? Are you going to be able to? Are you going to give free hospitals and benefits and all this stuff? In which case, you can't have open borders. So I'm all for open borders. Come to work. Come to bring value. Come. Equal play. Everyone come. But if you don't work, then you don't eat. That's biblical.
But it's interesting in what you were saying. Like, even the complete divide, you know, if you're 80 and there's 80-year-olds in the UK that are freezing to death, that can't afford their heating, and then £4,000 a month for illegal immigrants in four-star hotels,
mine's a four-star.
There's no one that can make sense of that you can't help but feel that there's something sinister here at play. That's how it makes me feel. Like, that does not make sense.
But this is the thing. They're doing it on purpose to make us outraged, to then go, don't worry, we have a solution. Brick card! So when you realise, I mean, and that's why I said I was part of it. I was getting outraged, making videos, because it is outrageous. And it's almost that they it's a mockery.
100%.
It's almost that they're doing it deliberately to wind people up, because it's so outrageous. And then they bring out, oh, don't worry, we've got a solution. We're going to bring out digital ID. And everyone's like, oh, okay, then. And then they bring out digital ID, and then boom. But I think money's going to crash to zero.
How do you invest your money outside of property? Do you do like crypto and stuff again now? If you were going to get a 20-year-old now, given the property market in the UK, would you still tell them to do what you're doing, or would you?
I would tell them to start a business.
Okay.
Yeah, I would tell them to learn to start, because you need to be able to make money. That's it. And you need, if you can't make lots of money, everyone's worried about, where do I invest my money? I'm like, how much you got? 2.5 grand. I'll be quiet. You don't need to worry. What happens if the banks, then you lose 2.5 grand and no one cares and it doesn't really matter. Now, if you got 2.5 million, now you can start asking questions like, where do you think it's safe to invest my money? But if you've got no money, then you need to think about, how can you build your business? How can you be valuable? How can you get in communities where rich people want to protect you? That's the thing. I said earlier, I don't have a plane, but it don't matter because I've got friends who got a plane. If it gets bad, I've got friends that need me alive.
They're going to get you out of here.
Yes. Yes. How can I become valuable to rich people that need me to be alive? Well, for example, if you know how to find really good property deals, forget investing in them. Find them for rich people. Let them give you 5 grand a pop. Do that once a week. Make 20 grand a month. Great. Get in some communities. Get well liked and get well protected. I think that's part of the solution. And then obviously you can start building. You can start building up things using purchase, lease options, and different stuff. Fine, but I think people need to be proactive. The people that are not prepared are going to be screwed. And the same thing happened in 2019. 2019, 2020, interest rates were 0.1%, and I was standing like in a desert, metaphorically speaking, shouting, "Take these, buy properties!" And it was, oh, no, but it's scary times. It's scary times, Samuel. I know money's free, but if we buy a property, it might drop because it's scary times. And while all the losers were saying it's scary times, what were all the rich people doing? Buying, taking advantage. Then what happened? House prices went absolutely astronomically high. Then what happened? Base rate went from 0.1% up to 5% something. And now it's too late. And I feel that we're in an emergency right now. We're in the last buying cycle.
That will be possible?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't think in 5-10 years, it will be like London, like I said earlier, when it's like, oh, either you bought a long time ago or you're just rich. Mm. Your parents inherited, it must have left something to you. That'll be the same even in...
It's impossible to London, even like a 3-bed house with a small garden. Like, you're talking millions of pounds. But it's not even a nice area.
All the rich companies and overseas investors used to aggressively buy in London. But those same companies now, you know where they're buying? Manchester, Birmingham, Liverpool, even Cardiff in Wales. So the same thing. If you go to an auction now, it's mad because everyone's talking about, oh, it's so scary, it's such a bad time. Everyone's, ooh. But if you actually go to an auction, the corporations are aggressively buying. But what they're doing, and they're going to do this in the new budget, prediction, you heard it here first, they're bringing in taxes to kill individuals, to kill the amateurs. But the corporations, like the national insurance, the wealth tax, all like that won't apply to the corporations. That is they can't take your properties and your assets from you because that would be breaking international law.
Yeah.
But what they can do is tax them from you.
And they can debank people now.
They
debank Nigel Farage.
Oh yeah, terribly. And I know Nigel personally. And what happened to him was, but it's not rare. But people don't want to talk about it because then it's almost embarrassing,
isn't
it?
It's humiliating, isn't it?
It is a bit.
Because it's like you're almost like the black sheep.
I am the black sheep. That is literally my name. I'm the black sheep.
Do you think Nigel and Reform will get in next?
Oh, absolutely do. And I pray that they will, because I think that's the best hope for our future. And some people will hate me for it. But what about this policy? I'm like, hang on, who are you voting for? Labour?
Did you vote last?
Yes.
And you voted Reform?
Yes.
Hopefully that'll bring some kind of shift to the UK. You can't help but feel that everything's just on eggshells here, though.
Yeah, but it's less now. People can speak a bit more freely. Now,
yeah, like you say, the tide's turning. We wouldn't have been able to have this conversation.
Even Mark Zuckerberg, did you see him where he's like, he's now fighting and he's saying, yeah, you know, and he's realised that actually, but he wasn't talking like that in 2020.
Sorry, what about when he come back and admitted that they had to censor everyone's posts? Like, right. We were told. But like, you couldn't have said that.
I really hope that Mark Zuckerberg gets some inspiration from Elon Musk and becomes a bit of a badass.
Talking about Mark Zuckerberg and the internet and stuff, like, you're talking about homeschooling your kids. What is it that you really want to instill in them? And privileged children can quite often lose the hunger like that yeah. people like you have? And is that a fear, and how are you going to mitigate that?
It's very interesting. It's hard because when you've got kids that live in your world, you can't... I grew up with nothing. My parents separated when I was 7, and I had not particularly... I mean, my mom is the most amazing mom, and she gave me opportunities, loved me. But in terms of like financially, and you know what I mean? Like, I didn't have anything given to me. And I had things a bit hard. I was stabbed when I was a kid. I got stabbed as a teenager.
Sorry.
So, you know what I'm saying? And part of that maybe gave me the fire. I got thrown out of school and church and college, chucked out and hated.
You had grit.
Yes, I got grit. I'm like, I don't care what anybody thinks apart from 6 people. It's another, I got 6.
Apart from my wife, then I'm terrified.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah,
and
exactly.
And then I'm going to hide under this desk.
No, it's my wife, my church.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah.
My customers.
Yeah.
My staff and myself.
Okay.
Not BBC.
Perfect.
Yeah. So that gave me the grit. But you can't be like, okay, so I'm going to raise my kids the same then. I'll just let him walk in Warsaw, in the black country at night and get stabbed because it'll be good for him. Because that's not, you can't.
So how do you create in that environment that's going to make them hungry?
It's a tough one because you can't put hunger in anybody. You can't give anybody the fire. I mean, I try certain things. Like, for example, I usually make them fly economy. So when we fly, they'll fly economy, I'll fly first, and I tell them why. So you got to earn this. But then when I finally get a plane, I can't do that anymore. It's like, I've got a house with a beachfront house with multiple bedrooms and a chef and full-time maids. The kids just grow up with that. But I have to just sometimes tell them. I have to drive them down the road, take them to some of the poor parts and go, see that house though? And they go, yeah, what did you think of it? And they go, oh, it's horrible. And I go, you know what I say? That's where you're going to live.
But also, you being wealthy and homeschooling them is giving them more of an isolated life where that would just appear
no,
to be their reality.
I don't think so. I don't think so. An isolated life is a life in school. Where you
no,
just...
but what I mean is they're not seeing other kids who haven't got chefs and
yes,
things.
They do. I just took them to some of the poorest of the poor, remotest villages in the world in Zimbabwe, where they were seeing kids with nothing, coming out with rickets in their feet, no roofs in the school building, and they were playing with them.
Mm.
So just when people say that, it's a misconception. People say, oh, your kids are homeschooled, so they're in a bubble. No, your kids are in a bubble because they're in school.
So what's important that you and Amanda really want to get them to like 16 and be like, do you know what? They know the core of this and we've instilled this in them and it's really important.
I think critical thinking, I think that's really important because at school they don't teach you to think. They teach you to listen and to follow instructions and to put your hand up when you want to go to the toilet. So I think critical thinking, I think communication skills, being able to articulate yourself and debate and have conversations like this. I think financial literacy, being able to be financially independent and understand how money works. I think these are skills that are, to me, very important. But also, of course, you know, we teach them... Because then sometimes people go, oh, but they need to learn maths still. It's like, of course. I'm not saying they're not going
to
learn.
Yeah, but only to a degree. Like, you've got a calculator now. Who needs to know the square root of blah, 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 blah? Like, I don't know.
No, it's true. It's ridiculous. I mean, most of what you learn in school is either pointless, but most of what you do in school is crowd control anyway. And
but interestingly, earlier you touched on the fact that ChatGPT was rigged.
Yes.
So
yeah,
that
rigged.
Won't be a device through which you would teach them.
No, I let them use ChatGPT, absolutely, because it's much less rigged than the education books.
Okay.
But yeah, it's rigged to a point because ChatGPT, I mean, you can catch it out if you know what to ask it.
Well, it knows what to tell you. It's a people pleaser.
Kind of. But ChatGPT, all ChatGPT is it just knows everything that's on the internet.
Yeah.
So... the internet's rigged because there's certain stuff that you can't put on the internet. Get taken down. Like when I put the video of the bank saying we can't give you the money, I put it on YouTube, it got taken down. Why? Because they don't want it there.
Mm.
So the internet's rigged to a point. And that's why I need to be sometimes careful what I say because I already have a target on my back and I don't want to say stuff like for instance, in 2020, I did a video what I thought about the pandemic and the video got taken down.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, so I can't... Okay. So therefore, the information that's on the internet... is limited, and ChatGPT only knows what's on the internet, so therefore ChatGPT is rigged to a point. Like if you ask ChatGPT, how do I get rich, how to become a millionaire, it will say, work hard, save up money, put it in the bank. That's stupid, that's dumb. But then if you challenge it and call it out, it will usually apologize and say, you are correct. But yeah, people don't know how to do that. They don't know how to think like that.
Do you use it often, ChatGPT?
All the time.
For like what?
Everything.
To like write emails and stuff or?
No. Well, I might do that as well, but
no, definitely not.
No, definitely not that. No, more to think. I use it as like a sounding board. So I'll just spend 45 minutes dropping a voice note to ChatGPT telling it all about my life. And then I'll say, tell me what questions I should ask you now to improve my situation.
Interesting.
Yeah, do you not use it like that?
No.
Really?
No. I use it to streamline stuff because my head's pretty chaotic. Example, I used it today for you. I went and listened to loads of stuff about you. I make a note section on my phone with like a couple of notes, things that I'd like to ask. Yeah. And then I send it to him saying, can you format this into like subjects and questions? And then, because I'm long, I write them out myself. But then most of the time I don't use it. But it's actually the process of me doing the research and writing and writing out the questions that kind of stick with me. Whereas if I just asked it, like, you know, send me some questions for Samuel Lees today, it's not going to be reflective of me. I don't think it's all about that human part. And I wouldn't have had the lesson in doing the research and having the understanding. You kind of bypass learning.
Do you like to debate with ChatGPT though? Because I debate with it every day about everything.
Do you?
Oh, yeah. All the time. And I use a different version as well. I use ChatGPT, but you can put filters on it, can't you?
So I don't think maybe I'm using it enough then to know this.
I don't think you're using it right at all.
No. My boyfriend uses it a lot. He has like this, is it the one where it's like £250 a month, the deep research this? Like, yeah. His thing's for like 5 minutes. Like,
yeah.
And I'm like, mate, who's got that time? I just want it to function.
No, but I
want to
debate with it. So I want to be, I'll like put a topic up. I say, like, I think this, boom. Prove me wrong. And it'll come on and go, no, you're wrong because da 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 da. And then I'll debate it back and forth. And I can't sleep until it admits it's wrong. If it says, you are actually correct. But sometimes it doesn't like to fully apologise.
What kind of topics have you
thrown? Oh, like everything. Everything to do with even the stuff we're talking about. Do the government want you to be poor? Is the system rigged for you to be poor? Is digital ID anything to do with illegal immigration? Or is it really just about complete control so they can switch you off with a button if you step out of line and threaten the establishment like I have done? What are the chances that I will be turned off if I stay in the UK when digital ID comes in? We'll talk about that kind of stuff.
And all of those reasons there, is that the reason you left the UK as well?
I haven't actually left the UK. I might transfer my assets from my UK companies over to trusts and offshore accounts and different things like that, maybe. I'm still in the UK. I'm in the UK right now. We're doing this in the UK.
We're in London.
I have to spend 6 months in Dubai in order to have my
residency.
Well, not just residency, but in order to be to pay Dubai taxes, you know?
Okay. Which are very minimal compared to the UK, right?
I mean, you do pay some. You pay like 9% corporation tax, 5% VAT tax. So you do pay some taxes, but they're more reasonable. And it's just a better country to live in my opinion, because it's safe and you don't get stabbed. And they don't teach children about sex education.
Never.
And I think it's nice to be in the sunshine. But at the same time, listen, man, I don't want to be like one of these people that bash the UK when the UK helped make me what I am. Mm. I've made millions and millions of pounds in the UK. I've used all these strategies to build my portfolio. I've got beautiful tenants. I'm running hotels with super happy guests. I've got little holiday lets in the Peak District, which I love visiting. And I've got a hotel in the Peak District in Buxton, which is fabulous. I'm renovating it now.
And a castle.
And a castle. I own a castle, I am selling because it's a bit of a money pit, but that's another story. I own a castle. I love the UK. I love the culture. I love the opportunity. I love it. But I think that when you become wealthy, especially if you're not part of the club, that you get persecuted. So making money in the UK is easy, but keeping millions and being outspoken begins to get a bit tricky.
Let's take it back to that moment we spoke about at the beginning of the interview when you were kicked out of the church.
Yeah.
If you could go back to that boy today and you could have a conversation with him, what would you tell him?
I would say you're going to be extremely successful. Believe in yourself. Don't listen to what anybody says.
So how is it you want to be remembered?
I want to be remembered for helping people be awake, to seek truth, to be courageous. I want to be remembered for being courageous. And ultimately as well, helping people become financially awake, but also helping people become financially independent.
Free.
yeah, financially free, financially independent. To get through the difficult times, people go, man, do you remember in the 2020s and 30s when the divide between the rich and poor and comfortable and middle class became extinct? Do you remember those days? But there was one man called Samuel Leeds who helped more people go from the poor and comfortable over to the rich than any other human on the planet during that era. And here is his stature.
And what do you think it is about you that's helped you made it then, make it as such?
I think it's just the fact that I didn't have anything to lose. You know what I mean? Like when I started out, I met Tony and some of the guys. They believed in me. And because I'd failed at so many other stuff, like in school and this, I was never really liked. I was just like, oh, wow, I could do this. And it became a game.
Mm.
Like people, your self-worth can kind of, you know, like if you get good at something like a sport, like, oh, I'm really good at badminton and your whole identity is around badminton.
Yeah.
I do feel to a point, rightly or wrongly, that like my self-worth and self-belief kind of became, okay, I'm not good at lots of things. I'm not very popular with the girls and I'm not very good at this. And, you know, I was the class clown and failed at this. But man, I'm making more money than my teachers were making. Like for me, that was like, wow, I'm good at this game.
Have you confidence?
Yeah, made me confident. And then because I became confident, I threw myself. And that is partly true as well. I say about the, there's no difference between 50 million and 100 million, but there is a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
If I'm going to pick one.
You know what I'm saying? Because there is a little bit, not because of what the money can do, but because of, it's like if you're playing football, you might be winning. Yeah. I'm playing my enemy. I'm beating my enemy 3-1, but I want to beat them 10-1 just because I can. I want to get this 10-0.
Mm.
I want to whoop them because the score of the game shows how big I'm winning. Mm. So I like making money. I don't talk about my net worth too much. And partly for that as well is because it is subjective somewhat. So if I sit here and say my net worth is 100 million or whatever it is, but actually that's assuming in my mind that I could sell this for this and this for this. And then people go, okay, give us a breakdown. And they end up selling something for less. It's like, oh, it's not really.
I've seen people,
who was it? There was someone that said that they were a billionaire. And then it turned, I think it was someone in Kim Kardashian's family, Kylie Jenner or something. She said she was a billionaire. And it turned out that her net worth was 936 million. And then she had an expose piece in Forbes. They were like, oh, she says she's a billionaire, but she's not. And it's like, you know what? She'd have been better to say nothing. Because
100%.
Because people are laughing at her. Ha, ha, she's not a billionaire. It's like, yo, do you have any idea how much 936 million is? Like, you are worth literally less than 1 million. You ain't even got a million. And you're laughing at someone because they're not a billionaire. So that's why, like, I just feel like I don't want to talk about things in public.
Yeah.
When the public don't even know how to act right. They don't even, anyone that's going to judge me on how many millions I'm, it's like, you know what? You don't have the right to know because you're not investing in my company and you're not a close friend. So I ain't talking publicly about the ins and outs of something that's somewhat subjective anyway. But what I will say is I make tens of millions of pounds every year. And if I make less than a million in a month, I would be very, very upset. And I've not made less than £1 million revenue in a month for probably at least 4 years.
Wow. And what's the biggest month?
Over 2 million.
Wow. As you know, the show is called Getting There. I feel like we're all striving for this destination of some kind. What is it you're striving for? Where are you heading?
I'm heading to have an impactful life and to just be remembered for good things and also to be a great role model to my kids. And I've got 4 kids and, you know, above all, I'm a family man. And to just have a good relationship with God and life's short. My granddad passed away today.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, my granddad passed this morning. And I just think...
You don't have to be here.
nah. You know, he lived a really good life and he was old. And it's very sad. And I am sad about it, very sad about it. But when you think about things like that, no, my granddad passed this morning. I was just with him not too long ago. He was making jokes. He said to me when I last saw him, he said, hey, fatty, I thought you'd lost the weight, you know, because I put a little bit back on. So, like, he was totally all there. And he had a good life. But it's sad, but it also makes you think life's a bit short.
No, it's so short.
And it doesn't matter what people think. It doesn't matter. Even your achievements. Even my kids. Are they even going to care that I have a castle? Not really. Is anyone? Not really. Nothing really matters. And as a Christian, I think my relationship with God, and being right with God and being right with my family and my family remembering me for, I liked spending time with Dad. You know what I mean? I just like spending time with it. That's the most important
thing. It's the small stuff that actually matters, isn't it? We think it's these
and the big stuff. The big stuff matters too. But it's there's no point making the millions but then missing the mission.
Or the moments.
Or the moments. There we go. There's the mission and the moments and the millions. But you want all three. Some people will then take it too far and they'll say, I'd rather just be happy than... I'll be quiet.
No. You'd rather be happy on a jet off to Dubai.
No, the people that say that is an excuse. Or they'll say... That's the thing with the religion things as well. People were like... They're, in their mind, they'll try and make it like, oh, if you're rich, you're not right with God because you couldn't possibly have both.
Yeah.
If you're rich, then you're miserable because you couldn't possibly be both. But if you actually all things, if you're in a good relationship with God, you've got a nice, happy family, you've been married 10 years... You're in good shape. You could kick their ass.
You cracked it. There you go.
Because I can kick anybody's ass, basically.
Yeah, you cracked it.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I train every day. And so if someone comes for me, it's like, I could beat you up. I could annihilate you in a debate. I could take to the cleaners legally and sue you. I make way more money than you. That's why it must be hard for you.
Yeah.
And then people will then say, but you're not being humble. You lack humility. No. You lack humility. The reason I'm rich... It's because I was humble enough to say, I don't have the answers and get a mentor. You need to be more humble. And it's the ultimate thing, isn't it? Like people say about me, they'll be like, oh, you can't buy class. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like, I've got nothing else to say. So I'll say something so subjective to make me feel a little bit better. But it doesn't matter.
Well, I've had a wonderful conversation with you, Samuel. Thank you so much for coming on.
I appreciate it.